Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Traveler, episode 283. Today the Amateur Traveler goes to a great place to get fish and chips, where you can see the only primates in Europe that don't like soccer, and a great big rock as we go to Gibraltar. I know that I should be heading home, but maybe not today. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into this week's interview, I do have three news stories for you. We know that things can get a little tense when you're flying in that great big metal tube, but the situation on an American Airlines flight this week got a little out of hand, so much so that the pilot had to dump fuel and head back to the airport, and they were escorted in by F-16 fighters because the melee had broken out on the plane, all because somebody had reclined their seat. Really? Really? On the other hand, a good reason to cancel a flight was found by Qantas that canceled a flight because they found small rodents on board. Not only is that gross, but they wanted to make sure that nobody had been chewing through the wires of the airplane. You may be familiar that sometimes travel agents get to take fam trips, and a fam trip is a familiarization trip. The idea is that they get to travel someplace at discounted or possibly even free rates in hopes that they will then sell that location or that trip or that tour. Probably one of the top priorities for a company that is hosting travel agents on a fam trip is that they don't kill them. But that's what happened, unfortunately, to three travel agents who died after drinking what is believed to be alcohol mixed with methanol. One woman is still in a coma. This happened to a Russian travel agency in Turkey. For links to all three of those stories, check out the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome the show Spud Hilton, who's come to us from the San Francisco Chronicle, and come to talk to us about Gibraltar. Spud, welcome to the show.
Thanks, I appreciate it.
And I should say, if there's been any improvement in the writing of Amateur Traveler here over the last year, I took a writing course from Spud at the, and I'm forgetting the name of the place.
That would probably be the Book Passage Travel Photography and Food Writing Conference that happens every year up in Corte Madera.
And of course, if there has been no improvement in the writing on the Amateur Traveler, that's because I haven't been paying attention to Spud's advice.
Or the advice wasn't very good. Who knows?
Spud, why should somebody go to Gibraltar?
Well, Gibraltar is one of those great mixes of places. Everybody likes to think that it's a sort of a culture that is out of place. They say, oh, it's a little bit of England that just happens to be wedged in between Spain and Africa. But, you know, I think that's a simplistic view. While essentially it is protected by England and, you know, has been for quite some time, the fact is Gibraltar is its own culture. The people who live there believe they are their own culture. And it's this beautiful mix of sort of British upbringing along with some Andalusian Spain ease. And there just happens to be, right in the middle of this particular culture, this giant rock that everybody on the planet can recognize.
And you say for some time, I want to say that this dates back to the Napoleonic era, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct. At some point, basically, in the many, many wars between England and France, France had to give up Gibraltar, despite the fact that it's in Spain. And the French actually spent quite a few years after that, even teaming up with the Spanish once trying to get it back and never did, in part because it's one of the single most strategic spots on the planet as far as warfare goes. I mean, it's right at the mouth of the entire Mediterranean. You can't get into that end of the Mediterranean without going past it. But knowing that, the British basically did whatever they had to hang on to it. So they actually drilled holes through that thing. That rock, that supposed sturdy rock, is actually Swiss cheese. I mean, there's so many miles of caves inside that thing because the British were never going to give up.
Well, and as I recall, the fame of Gibraltar really goes back to classic times with it was one of the two pillars of Hercules.
Yes, yes. It was actually thought of that. And if you go anywhere in Sevilla, for instance, in Spain, mm-hmm. at the Alcazar, you'll see there are all these wonderful Spanish tiles where half of them from a certain period will refer to being the end of the world where the pillars of Hercules are. And then half of them will sort of refer to, oh, they're not anymore the end of the world. There was a point at which essentially this continent thought that was the end of the world.
Right, sure. Interesting. So if I go to Gibraltar, this is a place where I would normally ask what kind of itinerary, but we're just going to stay in Gibraltar and day trip. I mean, you can see the whole thing with one hotel room.
Yes. Yeah, you can pretty much experience all of Gibraltar in a couple of days. And probably the most interesting thing about Gibraltar from the actual traveler's sense is getting on Gibraltar. Because quite frankly, there's a little land bridge that connects Gibraltar to Spain, you know, right around, it's not Tarifa, but there's a city that's right there at mm-hmm. the side. And there's this little land bridge that connects it, but perpendicular to that land bridge, they've built an entire commercial passenger jet airport. So the runway comes in and cuts across that land bridge, which is great. It's the only place you can actually put a runway just specifically for Gibraltar because it's not a huge island. But in order to get, if you're walking from Spain to Gibraltar, you literally have to wait for the gate to go up and you have to walk across an airport runway. And it's not just, you know, like a little Cessna right. airport runway. It's a commercial jet runway. And they make sure to give you plenty of warning if there's any jets coming. But still, it's a little unnerving because you basically get to see where the skid marks are, where the jets come down. And you're thinking, wow, I wouldn't want to be here when one comes down, that's for sure.
And you say it's not a big island. It's, in fact, not an island at all.
It's not an island at all. Exactly. It's, what is it, an isthmus? Okay. I believe that's correct.
I think it'd be a peninsula. An isthmus would connect two bodies of land.
Ah, good point. Yeah. All right. But the rock itself is an odd anomaly. And just so we're clear, not everybody lives on the rock. As a matter of fact, not a lot of people actually live on the rock itself. There's a big sort of flat land mass that is around the rock. That is where most folks live. And the rock itself just sort of juts out. It's a geologic sore thumb that just happens to jut out of the ocean at this point, that oddly enough is actually upside down.
Okay.
The rock at the top of the rock of Gibraltar, is actually older than the rock at the bottom.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
At some point, the thing turned over. It just flipped over, just like when you have tectonic crashing of tectonic plates. Some of that stuff is like in a car accident. It's just going to flip over and bend back. And that's essentially what happened is the plate that is most of Africa at some point ran into the plate that is most of Europe. And the Rock of Gibraltar is one of those spurs that just bent backwards.
Huh. Interesting. So is the rock the place you start when you go to Gibraltar?
You know, not really.
Okay. Interesting.
The town itself stretches along the western side of the rock. The eastern side of the rock is where the sheer cliff is that goes pretty much down to the ocean. There's a few things down there, including a small resort, one of the few things that's on that side of the island. But for the most part, you come into town, and the first thing you realize is that you are in a British-infused culture where you've got double-decker buses, you've got telephone and mailboxes that are bright red, and the fact that you have telephone boxes at all is kind of funny, but that and the fact that almost everybody speaks English. When I was there, I was coming from Seville, and we rode the bus down. We basically came over, got off at the bus station and walked across. We're all set to get our passports stamped. And the guy looks at us and says, really? You want your passport stamped? Oh, okay. Well, whatever. Where one time that was actually closed off, completely closed off. The Spanish desperately wanted the rock back. And they, even in modern times, have been sort of fighting against Gibraltarese autonomy.
Well, this is during the time of Franco, they cut it off, as I recall.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And it stayed that way for quite some time. And there's still some animosity there. But the simple fact is that when you're walking in, you're coming from Spain where everybody's speaking Spanish. You walk in and suddenly everybody's speaking English, pretty much. I shouldn't say everybody. There's a whole lot of folks who are from Spain who do most of the work in Gibraltar. I mean, there's a lot of jobs to be had in Gibraltar, waiters, maids, things like that, that are mostly actually workers from Spain coming in for the day, leaving for the day. Because most of the workers come from Spain and there's only one road in or out of Gibraltar, every day in the morning and every day in the late afternoon, there's basically one big giant traffic jam, especially if there's any airplanes landing. Because in the same sense that you have to walk across this airport runway, they all have to drive across that runway. And if there's a plane landing, which takes about half an hour for them to clear the runway, get it ready, clear everything, and then land the plane, and then open it back up to traffic. Well, traffic can actually back up through almost the entire length of Gibraltar in order for people to get off the island at that time of day.
Interesting. So where would you start? You come into Gibraltar, you get your passport stamped, and then what do you do?
Well, it's a walkable island. You basically, if you're not taking one of the cabs or one of the double-decker buses or things like that, it's not all that difficult to walk into town. You're walking pretty much through town to begin with, and so long as you follow the right routes, you'll eventually find yourself in the sort of center of things, what used to be the actual fort that was on Gibraltar. So basically, when you're walking in from the actual entrance to the island, it's not that far where you eventually come across Grand Casements Square. If this were, you know, sort of your average old world European town, this would be the main plaza. This would be where, you know, everybody sits around and sips tea because it was planned that way. In this case, this was actually just a military ground that was sort of turned into a European plaza because it was the main military ground inside what was the original fortress that defended the rock for so long. And I think that's probably the best place to start. It's ringed with a certain amount of touristy shops, touristy restaurants and things like that. But it's also what feeds you into the main streets that are where everyday Gibraltar life is. The shops where people pick up their necessities of life, the shops where people are just going out to eat for birthdays and everyday celebrations.
Are there particular sights we want to see when we're down here in the town?
Down here in the town, I think a lot of what you're looking for is the history, including there's a few cemeteries from Napoleonic times. There's a few great walls and other battlements that are left over from when it was a major fort. There's a lot of sort of neighborhoody stuff that you can go through and find pubs. Now, granted, some of the sort of British pubs, and I use air quotes on that, British pubs, are going to seem very touristy. They're just going to tout, oh, we're the most British in town and things like that. Because there's a lot of UK tourists who actually go to Gibraltar. But there's also a lot of Britishness and a lot of Gibraltarness in some of these places. It may look like just a British pub, but more than likely it's run possibly by somebody who's been there their entire lives and doesn't even really associate with England necessarily. Or the waitress is Polish and will tell you all about how she managed to get to Gibraltar and things like that. There's a lot of intermixed culture, especially with the Spanish influence coming in. There are entire shops that are just Spanish. And I think it's worth wandering around the neighborhoods for a while. Doesn't take long, but it's worth wandering around the neighborhoods as well as seeing a lot of the history that's there.
And you say intermixed culture, so were we talking fish and chips and tapas?
Yes.
Okay.
We're literally talking fish and chips and tapas. I mean, there's enough fish and chips and meat pie and, you know, shepherd's pie and pints of Guinness and things like that. Although it's an interesting variation. I had a beer at one point in one of the places where the beer itself was called Bushy's Gibraltar Barbary Beer. And literally, it has a slogan on it that said, Barbary beer, like the rock, it's not for sharing. And it's a deliberate swipe right there. It's a deliberate swipe, I believe, at both the Spanish and the British, because Gibraltar would really like to be autonomous. They want to be essentially their own. They consider themselves their own culture. But, you know, it's funny to be drinking a little Bushy's Gibraltar Barbary beer and noticing that on the label, the languages that are on the beer are English, Spanish, and Manx. Now, you're one of the few people who probably actually, I'm guessing.
You have stumped me, Spud, and I love it.
Manx. It's a little-known language that's theoretically only spoken on the Isle of Man.
Okay.
Yeah, and the fact that there's Manx on the side of this beer, I'm not sure if it's because they get a lot of tourism from Manx on Gibraltar, people who can commiserate with being a tiny British-like island or something, but that's on the side of the beer.
And I want to say Manx is a form of Celtic, of Gaelic.
That's probably correct. I'm not too good with my linguistics, but that's probably right. And especially at night, the land below the rock is just this wonderful little town where you can just sort of wander the streets and very safe, almost no crime to speak of, and find a nice little restaurant, find a nice little British pub, pop in for a pint, and basically, provided you don't act like a tourist too much, they tolerate you and sometimes even embrace you. I actually had some pretty good conversations with a guy who at first I thought was going to kill me when he found out I was an American. Then he found out that I didn't vote for Bush and we were fast friends. So it worked out okay.
Now, we talk about some of this part of town of Gibraltar being touristy. Are there places that your guidebook is going to direct you to that you're going to say, no, not worth your time?
You know, Grand Casement Square is one of those places that you could easily write off as just a tourist trap if you wanted to. You go into this, it's a big plaza. It actually has things like a subway on it. And I don't mean Subway the Underground, I mean Subway the sandwich shop. It has mostly what tourists want there. Although, quite frankly, you're also going to see a lot of locals there doing everyday life, just getting a sandwich. It would be easy to write off, but I don't think I would. I think it's part of that culture, and it's worth seeing for its military history. As far as other things you might write off, I can't think of anything for sure. We didn't get to spend a lot of time in town, so we didn't scour everything. But I don't know. Gibraltar itself and Grand Casement Square, it's something that would be easy to write off, and I don't think you should.
Okay. And then we've still got this big rock on our left here.
Well, as it turns out, the rock is accessible a lot of different ways. The history is accessible, but the rock itself is accessible. If you were one of those perennially, absolutely, irrevocably active types who's willing to run upstairs, you can actually run upstairs on Gibraltar. There's trails you can hike, but there's also just a set of stairs that will take you most of the way up the rock, provided you have strong knees and you're in a lot better shape than I am. What's a lot better for those of us who are not so in shape is that they've got this wonderful, wonderful tram that only takes about 3 to 4 minutes to get from the parking lot at the base of the mountain all the way up to essentially the top of the mountain where they've just recently, within the last year, built a new visitor center that includes a lot of the history of the place and a much better platform for standing out, taking pictures, getting the view. I'll be honest with you, a lot of the time, there's overcast or a fog that might come in through there, and it's might not always get to see Africa. On our particular day, we could see forever. I mean, it was gorgeous. We could look back across Spain and then look on the other side and see the Atlas Mountains on the other side, see Tangier and things like that. So we lucked out. It was a perfect view. But there's a lot of other things on the rock that are worth seeing. The rock itself has the trails that you could hike if you want the sort of natural side. It also has several sets of caves. The limestone has a bunch of natural caves, so it's not just the caves that the British carved out of it to hide from, well, not hide from, to defend not only from the French and the Spanish and eventually from the Germans, because they figured if the rock itself ever fell into German hands, they had a whole plan for how they were going to keep people sort of stowed away inside the rock to act as spies, to report on German activities and things like that. Huh. Fortunately, the rock never fell into German hands, so they didn't have to worry about it, but they carved so many tunnels. The nice thing is that there's a lot of natural caves, too, including some that haven't been fully explored. The first couple of guys who went off to explore one of the largest caves never came back. So exploration has been sort of a hit and miss thing. But on the rock, there's a much larger cave that, among other things, gets used for big events. It's almost sort of like a cathedral-like cavern that gets used for big events on the island, including, and wait for it, the Miss Gibraltar contest. They literally have the Miss Gibraltar contest inside the Rock of Gibraltar. Not on the side, not outside, inside the Rock of Gibraltar, which is something I just love. It's one of those things you couldn't ask for in a story. And it's called St. Michael's Cave, by the way. It's a limestone chamber. And once a year for the Miss Gibraltar Beauty Pageant, that's where it is. They also have, you know, tour groups, concerts and things like that. They go in through there. But it's fairly impressive.
Now, I would think in the heat of the summer, that would be particularly attractive.
Yes.
You're down there in a region. I remember being in Andalusia when it was 104 Fahrenheit, 40 degrees Celsius. So it gets kind of warm down there. So
without a doubt, although I will say that the rock and the land around it probably get a little more sea breeze than most places.
That makes sense.
Stuck out there sort of pointing into the strait. The cave is nice. It's not impressive on a scale with other caves you may have seen in the Southwest or a number of places where limestone caves are, they're really known for that. But being that it's inside this giant rock, it's actually pretty fun to see. There's a few trails to see it. Those same trails will take you out to sort of spots where you can look over and see a different view than the other side of the rock. The main reason most folks go up on the rock, other than to see what they can see, a sort of bear went over the mountain type of thing, is for the rock apes.
Right.
Now, this was truly a tragedy for me that I wanted to come back and write a headline to this story. I wrote a whole story about Gibraltar, and I wanted to write this headline that was called Granite of the Apes. And I thought, it's perfect, but there's
two
problems.
It's not actually granite, first of all.
It's not actually granite, and they're not apes. They're actually monkeys. They're a very specific kind of monkey that likely came from Algeria on boats. No, they didn't make their own boats. I mean, they came over from sailors who were going that way. There's a lot of different tales about how the apes actually got there. Some people actually believe that there are tunnels underneath the Strait of Gibraltar that allowed the apes to get there. Probably the most interesting thing about the apes, though, is not as much how they got there, but how it's probably the only place on the planet where a major world leader devised a secret plan to restock primates on an island. I mean, not on an island, on a rock. Essentially, this is brilliant. I love the whole thing behind it. But Winston Churchill, at some point, had a secret Gibraltar monkey plan. I'm just going to give you a second for that to sink in.
And you didn't think that this would be your good headline?
It turns out it was the lead to my story. But, you know, when you think of Winston Churchill, the guy's trying to fight a war and not doing too well in the process, but he's trying to fight a war, leader of the United Kingdom. And at some point he has to stop and help devise a secret monkey plan for Gibraltar. And
I assume the reason for that is that if the monkeys leave Gibraltar, then the British are supposed to leave.
Precisely.
Yeah, okay. That's to keep up morale. They're starting to get low monkey population, and okay, got it.
The monkeys were dying off. As it turns out, there weren't that many people on the Rock of Gibraltar who were not military during the war. They actually evacuated almost everybody from Gibraltar who was a citizen to other United Kingdom spots. But the monkeys were getting killed off. The monkeys were dying off for whatever reason. And literally, Churchill authorized a plan to secretly import a whole bunch of monkeys from Algeria to the Rock solely so that you could keep morale up and make sure that the legend never took place. The legend that if the monkeys ever leave Gibraltar, so will the British. And it's probably one of the more interesting facts, and it's probably the more head-scratching one, where you just go, really? This guy had time to sit back and think about importing monkeys. Okay, good. That's now, good to know.
My understanding from a few tourists who've been to Gibraltar is that they would just assume that the monkeys leave Gibraltar, that they're a bit of a pest.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's always hard to tell. It's a chicken and the egg scenario. It's hard to tell how much primates like that in the wild would be a pest if not interacting with humans.
Right.
So in other words, these are normal primates who are basically trying to run around and get your basic food. But they have so many humans coming solely to see these monkeys. And they're actually adorable. They're wonderful little playful monkeys that love to run around. But like a lot of places where that interaction isn't really a healthy relationship, you know, you get tourists up there, tour guides are basically giving them peaches and things like that to give to the monkeys. And the monkeys are basically climbing on top of people's heads. And people tend to say, oh, that's great. You know, I love this interaction. And then the monkey will steal somebody's camera and the tourists will get pissed off. And they'll say, well, wait a second. You got to take the good with the bad. If you're going to have this interaction, you got to expect the monkeys to do things that you're not going to like. It's hard to tell. I talked to a guy who is one of the main people who feeds the monkeys. Believe it or not, they have an entire system to make sure that they're all healthy. They count them. They check the males and females. The Rock is actually large enough where there are several, for lack of a better word, packs of monkeys on the island. And I don't think they have gang warfare or anything like that. But, you know, there are several different packs of monkeys, and they all sort of keep to themselves. But there's a guy who told us the story of Churchill's monkey plan, and he's the guy who runs around and every so often feeds the monkeys, in part to make sure that they don't start coming down into the town as much. That's where you start to run into problems, is when they're showing up on people's doorstep or back window or things like that. So,
besides Churchill's secret monkey plan, what else is going to surprise me when I go to Gibraltar?
I think one of the things that surprised me was the shape of the Rock. If you're anything like me, we grew up with that whole Prudential thing.
Right, sure.
You know, the Prudential Insurance Company get a piece of the Rock. And they showed this very specific shape. Well, unless you're coming at this thing from exactly the right angle, you are not going to recognize it at all. It's a long, sloping rock. The portion that actually is Gibraltar is about 2 miles long. And the Rock sort of builds up and slopes as a hill, for the most part, on one side of that. Well, if you go over to Spain and stand in a certain spot way over in exactly to the east, you're going to see what the Prudential picture looks like. But from almost any other angle, it doesn't really look like you would expect it to look like. And you also don't realize how much landmass there is around it. Gibraltar isn't just the Rock. It is that landmass, too. And that's sort of a surprise. Other than that, I think the surprise comes at how much Spain is on Gibraltar. There are enough people who over the years have been able to become Gibraltar citizens or just open up businesses there, things like that. So there, as you said earlier, there are fish and chips and there are tapas. There are all sorts of businesses that are essentially Spanish-speaking businesses for the people who work there, for the people who are tourists there. Now that the borders are open, you get a lot of Spanish tourists going there just to sort of catch some sun, see the view, go up on the Rock, visit the apes. There's actually, we ran into one couple that went to Gibraltar specifically for the surfing. Now, I don't know about you, but that's one of those things that never would have occurred to me.
No, I didn't know there was surfing in Gibraltar.
Surfing Gibraltar. I think that's one of those things that some people do solely to say that they did.
Sounds like Ski Hawaii there. One of those things that...
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Who's the most memorable person you met?
You know, I got to be honest, I think it was probably the Polish waitress that we had in this one restaurant that claimed to be the oldest British pub in Gibraltar. the Polish waitress actually, you know, we were the only customers on that particular night. It was a slow night. And she told us an interesting sort of story of how she got to be there and things like that. But she was probably a better person for our insight into how Gibraltar is its own culture, how it's a different culture, how for good and for bad, the people of Gibraltar see themselves as an individual country, as an individual culture, an individual entity. And she sort of told us about, like I said, good and bad. It's very difficult to sort of crack into that society unless you're either born into it or somehow welcomed into it. And so at the same time that it's a very kind of interesting, quirky, warm culture that's that mix of British and Spain, it can hold certain elements at arm's length. It wants to be its own and doesn't want to be so diluted, I guess, that it is something less than, I think is what the way, probably the way they look at it. And she had come there in part for a job and would love to live there in part because the schools are so much better, at least the way she was looking at it. They're English-speaking schools on Gibraltar than Spanish-speaking schools in Spain. But it is impossible to crack into that society to live there unless you have some sort of in, unless you have some sort of ability, which is why the population of the Gibraltar rarely fluctuates. It doesn't really go up or down all that much because they're very strict on immigration.
You talk about the uniqueness of the culture. What was one thing you saw and you had to laugh to yourself and say only in Gibraltar?
I think probably the only thing I can think of that really hit me as only in Gibraltar was that you could walk into a British pub in what is essentially the Spanish landmass and find a beer bottle that has three languages on it, including English, Spanish, and Manx. You know, it just struck me as one of those things that you wouldn't find this anywhere else except possibly the Isle of Man. But, you know, that's a whole other story.
As we go to wind this down, Spud, any other things that you think people should know before they go to Gibraltar?
Probably one of the things to know about going to Gibraltar is that it is really walkable. You want to try to get at least a couple nights hotel because spending time on the rock, you want to just be able to spend at least a day wandering around the rock, seeing the monkeys, checking out the history, walking the trails, things like that. But, you know, you could almost spend an entire day just wandering around the landmass that's below it, the town, because the town itself has a lot of interest in it. I always hesitate to point people to destinations where it's all based on a giant geologic attraction, you know, Grand Canyon. Well, everybody goes to the Grand Canyon, they look in the hole and they say, wow, that's an interesting hole. But nobody bothers to talk to anybody that lives around that giant hole. But I imagine it's a certain amount that way in Gibraltar, where they've got their one big attraction, which is the rock, and it's monkeys that are hanging off of it. And I think a lot of people sort of overlook the ability to wander around the culture that sits at the bottom of this thing that has developed and brewed over the centuries in a very unique position where they're on a piece of land that's been more contested than almost any other in history, including Kashmir. And they've got a certain weird way of looking at life. And I think so if you spend at least a day on the rock itself, spend at least a day hanging around downtown, that also gives you at least two nights to check out what are actually some really great restaurants. There are some really nice upscale restaurants. There's some, along with the homey pubs and things like that, we found at least one tapas place that was very tablecloth, cloth napkins and, you know, water glass and the whole bit.
And did you want to recommend any restaurants and or hotels?
The hotel we stayed at, I believe, was the Hotel Bristol. And I got to say, hotels in Gibraltar are going to be a little more expensive. In some cases, a lot more expensive. It's because they have a run of the place. They have a corner on the market, whatever cliche you want to use. But the Hotel Bristol we found very interesting, very kind of homey, a little pricier than we would have liked. But oddly enough, it seems to be where almost all extra paneling from people's dens from the 1970s went off to die in Gibraltar. Swear to God, every square inch of that hotel that can be paneled has been paneled. All the rooms, all the hallways, and it really felt like you're walking down a hallway towards, you know, Mike Brady's den or something like that. It just, it was very bizarre. But, you know, the people were very nice. The rates weren't exorbitant. And the Hotel Bristol is actually right downtown near the main street that leads to Casement Square. That main street is actually a pedestrian walkway where most of the interesting stores and shops are.
And did you have a pub you wanted to recommend or restaurant? You mentioned a good tapas place.
We ran into a good contemporary pizza place called Cafe Solo. It can be a little touristy, but they actually had some dishes on there I hadn't seen other places. And it was a sort of contemporary pizza, pasta, and Mediterranean place that was nice. We went into the Star Bar, which is the one that claims to be
the oldest.
It's, you know, it's traditional pub food. And obviously a traditional pub fare as far as Guinness and everything else. It's got some good beer. The tapas place I would have to look up because right now I'm not seeing it in my story because we didn't actually write about it, I guess. Yeah, bummer. The main way to get up the mountain, it's probably important to know, is called the Cable Car Gibraltar. And those rides are run about 4.5 pounds. Everything is in pounds, by the
right.
way. So when you're running around with your American money and then exchanging it into euros over in Spain, and then you pop into Gibraltar and you find out you have to change all your euros into pounds, you are just watching your money fall away in the exchange rate. But get used to it or pick up some pounds before you go. It's not too bad. But yeah, Cable Car Gibraltar is the one that gets you up the mountain.
And you were saying that everybody looks at Grand Canyon and says, what a nice thing. Actually, family lore has that I had a cousin from Nebraska who went to Grand Canyon, looked in and said, yep, you sure can't grow corn there. So apparently not everyone appreciates it. But final three questions.
Okay.
You take a lot of pictures. So all the pictures you took, what one brings you right back to Gibraltar? What one captured the place for you?
I'm going to say two of them, and one of them is just a shot on a beautiful clear day that looks down from the top of Gibraltar that captures one of the other lower jagged peaks and just looks back at this glorious scene with a blue sky and Spain just laid out in front of you. And you can actually see the shadow of the rock in the water below, and you get a sense of, this really is a giant geologic sore thumb. It really just sticks out of nowhere because there's nothing really in the immediate area that explains why this thing is there. And I love that shot. I think probably the other is just a picture I took of a sign that said, we have bangers and mash better than anybody else's. It's like, okay, I don't remember seeing that sign anywhere else in Spain. So it just struck me as kind of funny to suddenly come across bangers and mash and shepherd's pie and things like that. So,
okay. Final two questions. Finish this sentence for me. You really know you're in Gibraltar when what?
You really know you're in Gibraltar when almost every tourist outlet is advertising apes. Which seems not all that odd if you're in Africa, but you're in Europe. This is the only place in Europe where you will find apes.
Oh, interesting.
In this case, monkeys. It's the only primates you'll find in Europe. So you really know you're in Gibraltar if you're in Europe, if you find all the tourist outlets trying to sell you tours to the apes.
Okay. And if you had to summarize Gibraltar in three words, what three words would you use?
Jagged.
Okay.
Mixed.
Okay. You're saying it's a varied country.
Yeah, it's a varied country. You know, the word that comes to mind geologically, obviously, is, you know, jagged. Mixed as in British and Spanish influences.
Would you go as far as saying it's a country of contrasts?
No, Lord, I would never say that. Worst cliche in all of travel is land of contrasts. No, in this case, it has benefited from all the things that decided to mix together instead of to contrast.
Okay.
And if I came up with a third one, it would probably be history.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. There's a tremendous history. I mean, the whole Battle of Trafalgar and the folks from that are actually buried in the cemetery there. So
interesting. And I'm not sure that everyone remembers that, but that's when the British Navy defeated the French Navy and thus changed the course of this Napoleonic Wars, meant that England wasn't going to be invaded for one thing.
Yep. Yeah, that's absolutely right.
Well, thanks so much, Spud, for coming on the show and talking to us about Gibraltar. If people wanted to read more about you, we could clearly go to the San Francisco Chronicle, but where else could we go?
Probably if you go to sfgate.com, and that's sfgate.com, that's the Chronicle's main online site where you can find stories by me or, you know, stories from our department. I write a specific blog, a blog that is specifically me, at sfgate.com/badlatitude. And of course, the blog is just named Bad Latitude. And we're trying to put up videos and photos and some of the things that are behind the scenes from the trips I'm able to take, where you obviously can't get everything in print. If I love 50 pictures, but I can only get in 5, we try to put a lot of that sort of behind the scenes and extra stuff, outtakes, at the Bad Latitude blog.
Excellent. Well, Spud, thanks so much for coming on the Amateur Traveler.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure.
In news of the community, we received a comment from Barry Kramer on the episode about traveling to the Guangxi region of China. And it's a large post, so I won't read all of it. I'll let you check that out. But there were a couple things that I wanted to read. There are a few things that Sean did not mention that I would recommend. One of the most popular ways to get from Guilin to Yangshuo is to take the boat ride along the Li River. Even though this is probably the most famous tourist experience in the area, it is generally a beautiful and peaceful boat trip that lasts for about 4 to 5 hours. Along the way, you get to see remarkable karst formations, one of which is featured on the Chinese 20 yuan note, as well as the river traffic and scenery. Some reviews will tell you that the boat trip is not worth it, but we thoroughly enjoyed it. There are many different boats you can take, but the boats usually reserved for Western tourists are less crowded, and it was very easy for all of us to take a multitude of photographs. My wife even purchased some fruit from a local merchant who came up alongside our boat to sell to her. The boats arrive along the end of the Western Street in Yangshuo, and it is easy to get transportation back to Guilin. There are many small boat trips that can be taken on smaller bamboo raft boats in and around Yangshuo that are well worth the experience. We passed by the Yangdi Xingping scenic area on the way to Moon Hill and found it remarkably scenic. We were also told that the Yulong River Valley was similar in its scenic beauty. Also in Yangshuo, we enjoyed the nighttime show Impression Shangji Lui, which was directed by Yimuo Zhuyang, the director of the 2008 opening ceremony of the Beijing Olympics. The show boasts a cast of over 600 performers, but the real uniqueness is that the Li River and the mountains are lighted and used as a backdrop for the performance. I'll let you read the rest of Sean's comment by going to the episode 282, Travel to the Zhangxi region of China, because I think I have butchered enough Chinese for one day. Remember, there is a meetup for the Amateur Traveler this week. That is June 10th, 2011, in Vancouver, British Columbia. And that'll be in the afternoon, and details about that can be found at the Amateur Traveler Facebook page, facebook.com/amateurtraveler. With that, we will end this episode of the Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, feel free to leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com or send me an email to host@amateurtraveler.com. You can also follow me on Twitter @Chris2X. And as always, thanks so much for listening.